Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Dana White, in effect, has kind of kept all of us in the game. And UFC Twitter, UFC during the pandemic, actual fights in Jacksonville, and more this week in Nevada have kind of kept this thing humming along. Take Conor McGregor as an example. Last week, Conor McGregor hopped on Twitter, and UFC Twitter is getting better by the day. But Conor hops on Twitter, and he posts his GOAT thread. I mean, out of nowhere, Conor just shows up, reaches for his phone, and thumbs out a GOAT thread. It starts with this tweet, quote, "The array of finishes across two divisions with champions, status in one, Anderson Silva is number one, MMA GOAT. My array of finishes across three divisions with champion status in two, I'm number two, if not tied, one. However, still active, number one is fully secured by career end and easily," end quote. All right, first things first. Honestly, I respect the humility that Conor has to keep himself out of the top spot of his own thread. It takes an extremely humble and thoughtful man to do something like that, so I do salute Conor. In a sport that has, no, actually requires extreme ego to even step into the octagon, Conor is the one combatant who consistently checks his ego at the door. If, in fact, Conor even has an ego to check at all.
Fanboy. The man was a fanboy. He bought t-shirts of mine. He f***ing supported the cause. You remember that? You little fanboy bitch.
I will behead Rafael Dos Anjos. I will drag his head through the streets of Rio de Janeiro, through a parade of people, I'd imagine.
He looks like a little breakdancer or something. A little 12-year-old breakdancer. What the f***? He's 40! Carrying a school bag on stage. What are you doing with a school bag on stage? You can't even read.
I achieved it all, right? I broke the game before I was 30 years of age.
Ask these nuts. I don't have to do nothing for nobody. I'm psycho bred me. I don't have to no one's for a chick like you.
I'm cool with all the gods. Gods recognize gods.
His little legs, his little core, his little head. I'm going to knock him out inside four rounds, mark my words.
Game is on its knees, and I'm out here rallying around California in a car that spits fire, dressed like El Chapo, with anacondas on my feet.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
See? See? Total humility. My man is so humble. So then... He follows that with tweets that had GSP at number three and John Jones at number four due to, quote, he had Jones at four, quote, due to multiple lackluster decision performances plus questionable decision win, attempting to save play HW entry, avoiding its champion, end quote. And gracious historian that Conor is, Conor did note that, quote, I didn't mention PED results on multiple entrants, even though that makes me the clear current number one MMA GOAT, along with still being active. Although it shames as well as puts all runs and finishes in complete doubt. I've snored multiple juice heads. A true GOAT must do it all. End quote. That is one of my favorite quotes in the history of the world. I've snored multiple juice heads. That might be one of the all-time best phrases ever put on Twitter. That might be one of the all-time best phrases ever put on the internet. Not only one of my favorite Conor quotes ever, which is saying something, but one of my favorite athlete quotes ever. One of my favorite quotes by a human being, dead or alive ever. Quote, I've snored multiple juice heads. It's freaking brilliant. It's so good. It's so good, I'm almost willing to overlook Conor punching an old man in the face for refusing a shot of his whiskey. That said, I'm not exactly sure what the point of the GOAT thread was, other than Conor just riffing. However, it did catch the attention of Anderson Silva, who challenged McGregor on Instagram with a caption which read, quote, "Have immense admiration for the great athlete that Conor is, and I believe that a super fight would go down in the history of the sport. Neither of us need to prove anything to anyone. I believe that fans of the UFC and this sport would like to watch this great martial arts spectacle. It would be fantastic to test my martial arts skills against him," end quote. To which Conor tweeted back, "I accept." Oh, hell yes, right? Like, boom, it's on. A super fight between two legends at a catch weight of 176.37 pounds. Get your popcorn ready. Oh, man, this is going to be amazing, right? Right? Yeah, let's not get into that just yet.
Let's not get into that.
Because almost assuredly that's not going to happen. That's not on. Because Silva is just the latest in a long list of guys who have either challenged Conor or that Conor has challenged in the last few weeks alone. I mean, how the hell is Conor going to find the time to squeeze all these guys in? Because before accepting Silva's challenge, Conor had already accepted a challenge from Oscar De La Hoya to a boxing match. Except that Oscar never actually challenged him. He's also continued to talk about a rematch with Floyd Mayweather. Then there's Conor's promise to go up to 170 and clean out the entire division. And then this tweet from a few weeks back, quote, "Super excited for the LW title bout in July." I'm assuming he's talking about a fight with Justin Gaethje, who he had called out with this tweet, quote, "Justin, there is no danger in a man that hugs legs. We all know. Try and dance around what the real threat is here. All you want. I am going to bleeping butcher you. Your teeth. I'm going to put them on a bleeping necklace. Speak on my skills as a father. You are bleeping dead." End quote. Man, Conor is freaking everywhere. All these challenges, declarations, acceptances, they've all come in the last month across multiple sports, multiple weight divisions. In other words, Conor is looking to fight anybody, anywhere, in any discipline, at any time. Hell, I'm shocked he didn't also accept Cal's invitation to fight him. Or maybe he has.
Next time you fly to Las Vegas, I'll be waiting for you at the airport. Then I'm going to rip that beard off your face and make you eat it.
So yesterday, Conor's alleged partner in the business, Dana White, you know Dana, the czar of the UFC, he intimated that Conor might want to just pump the brakes a little bit, telling Brett Okamoto he hasn't even talked to Conor about his next fight. So if you were fired up for Conor v. Oscar, Conor v. Floyd, Conor v. Gaethje, Conor v. Silva, Conor v. Cal, Conor v. anybody, you better hold up, because Conor's partner would like a word or two first.
Conor and I have not talked about fighting. If you're Conor and you're sitting home, I mean, everybody's calling you out in every weight division. You know, who's next? I'm waiting for a friggin', you know, Ormier. I mean, who's going to call him out next? It's crazy. And you know Conor and his personality. He's going to respond to you.
Cormier. That's funny. Funny, Cormier's funny, but funny you should mention that, because Conor did retweet a video of himself from back in 2016 talking about the fact that he will fight anybody, anywhere, at any weight.
Look at everyone down there, 180 to 200, easy, everybody. Everyone I'm sparring is well over welterweight. I've got middleweights coming in fresh to try and wear me down. You know what I mean? So why not go up? They get slower and they get less free up there, I feel. They're stiffer, they're even more stuck than the lightweight division, so I'll keep going. I'll keep eating, keep training, and keep going until f***ing all the belts are wrapped up.
Do you think you
saw me with that mountain? What weight was he?
Yeah.
That mountain was 7 foot. He was 7 foot, and I folded him, so I can go all the f***ing way. You see that meme where they gave me Roy Nelson's belly? Do you see that? It's floating around. Who knows? I might go all
beard.
The way up with that. Nah, that's straggy. Look, that's mad hillbilly looking. I wouldn't go that far now. I need a trim on the old beard. But I'm afraid of no one. I'll go up and fight anyway. And that's it. Anyone can come down and step in that cage with me or any cage and see how they fare.
There's your lesson. If you challenge Conor on Twitter, there's a damn good chance he will accept it. It doesn't mean the fight's going to happen, but he can't not accept it. Dana's saying, man, he's just got to be patient. He just has to be patient.
I think what Conor needs to do, sit back, let a lot of these fights start rolling, and obviously the most important division, the 55-pound division, and see what plays out for him.
Bottom line, the one fight that Dana says that he has ruled out is Usman. Usman for the welterweight title. And he seems to be indicating that he wants Conor to fight the winner of Khabib and Gaethje. For good reason, right? That'd be massive. That'd be a legitimate fight, not some freaky sideshow cash grab like Conor and Oscar, or Conor and Floyd 2, or Conor and Cal. It'd be an actual fight. So as much attention as you might get for Conor and Anderson, who is currently number one on Conor's GOAT list, the guy is 45, right? He is coming off injury. So what, or surgery, what would a win over Anderson Silva do for Conor right about now? Pretty much nothing. What would a loss to Anderson Silva do to Conor right now? Pretty much it would be an unmitigated disaster. So the fight to make for Conor is the winner of Khabib and Gaethje. That is the issue. That's the fight we want. We're going to have to wait because Khabib and Gaethje probably will fight in September. Then you've got to wait a few more months for the winner of that fight. So that means another 6 months of Conor accepting fights from Daniel Cormier, The Undertaker, Cal, and anybody else. However, bottom line, 6 more months of Conor doing this is still better than Conor running dollies through buses, punching old men in the face, and snatching phones from fans in Miami. Capital One knows life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers, we have got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow, and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or do you want to cancel? So meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and helps if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations do apply. Steve Forbes. Steve, before we get into the opportunity in front of you at Wake Forest, let me first ask you, how are you and everybody around you doing as we deal with COVID-19, Steve?
Well, Jim, thanks for having me on, man. It's a pleasure to be a second-time guest. You know, the first time was awesome, but the second time will hopefully be even better. We're doing fine. You know, probably like everyone else, we've been very cautious, and my family and I, and you know, we made the NCAA tournament, as you said, on a Monday. At least we were named to the NCAA tournament after winning the title. And 3 or 4 days later, it was canceled. And basically, I stayed home for about 6 weeks, you know. And then my world got turned upside down when I took over a head job in the ACC during a pandemic. And actually, I think yesterday or the day before was the first time I think I've been in a restaurant maybe since the end of February, maybe early March. I couldn't remember. So we're doing good and you know, being cautious, trying to make sure we stay safe.
Steve Forbes joining us. You know, Steve, you mentioned it's your second time appearance in the jungle. First time you and I spoke was back in 2017, and I'll mention that in a minute. But just to follow up on what you just said, you said it was the first time you've been in a restaurant since February. I myself have not done that yet. What was that experience like?
It was a little surreal. You know, I was, I guess, a lot more cautious than I ever have been when I went into a restaurant. I kind of avoided it. I've been going back and forth between North Carolina and Tennessee since I changed jobs. So I went back to Tennessee a couple weeks ago and weekends ago, and it had opened up, and I didn't go. And then last Friday, I went out for breakfast, and, you know, it was a little strange to kind of see everybody kind of sitting that far apart and kind of, you know, people wearing masks, you know, serving you. And, you know, it went fine, but it was just a little odd to be back in the public eating when I hadn't done that in so long.
Sure. Wake Forest head coach Steve Forbes joining us. Also odd is making a career change, not a career change, but a job change in the midst of a pandemic. So what was it like to go through a hiring process and change jobs in the middle of a global health pandemic?
Well, it was different, you know. Actually, everything was done, you know, by Zoom. And, you know, Romy, when I was growing up, Zoom was a PBS television show. You watched after Sesame Street. I didn't have any idea what Zoom was. And but it was a very inclusive process. Talk to the AD, talk to donors, talk to provost, talk to dean, talk to Chris Paul, Tim Duncan. It was very, it was interesting. It was But, you know, a lot of times when you go through these things, you meet with maybe just the AD and his associate AD. In this situation, it was a lot of people in a matter of about 48 hours. And then, you know, by Thursday, I was the head coach. And so it went pretty fast. But it's tough. I mean, when you can't reach out to your own players and talk to them and introduce yourself and meet them and work them out and do the things you would do if in a normal situation, plus recruit, you know, everything is done by the computer or by the phone, which it's tough to develop relationships that way.
Wake Forest head basketball coach Steve Forbes, my guest. And listen, I mean, that's really heady stuff. Tim Duncan, Chris Paul. Wake Forest has got this amazing tradition on paper. It would seem like it would be an absolute no-brainer. But at the same time, I know how much you enjoyed your time at East Tennessee. As you've said, even going down to the Dunkin' Donuts to get your coffee. So was that a no-brainer or was that a difficult decision? And then how'd you go about making it?
Well, it's hard to walk away from something that you love. You know, and I'd had some opportunities over the past 5 years to leave, but it just wasn't the right time or the right fit for me. And, you know, Coach Greg Marshall, I know who's been on your show many times, and I worked for him. He always told me, don't mess with happy. You know, and I was very, very happy. But when you really go through this process and you really start to really analyze the situation, and first of all, it's, you know, it's in the ACC. Come on, it's, you know, traditionally the best league in America. You have a top 30 academic institution in the country. You have an NBA-level practice facility that was just opened. And like you said, it has this tradition of winning and great players. It really had a lot in common with ETSU on a different level when I went there. They'd had a lot of tradition, a lot of success in the past. It just needed a spark, you know. It needed some hope. It needed some life. And so when I really analyzed it that way, it really was a no-brainer. And you know, for a guy from Lone Tree, Iowa, you know, graduated with 32 people to be the opportunity to be a head coach in the ACC, there was just no way I could not do that.
See, Steve, this is the point that I was going to make. Like, when you made reference to Greg Marshall, for those who do not know your background, they might think, oh, well, that makes sense. He was Greg Marshall's guy. But the fact is, you and I spoke back in 2017 when you were taking ETSU to the NCAA tournament. We did talk about your journey at that point. We talked about the stops that you had, places like Southwestern Community College, Barton County Community College. You mentioned Lone Tree. Lone Tree, Iowa is not that big. When you consider the path that you took, when you consider where you started, what does it mean to you to be in the ACC and to be where you are right now?
Well, it means everything, and I think it's made me who I am, and I really honestly wouldn't trade it for anything, Jim. You know, to have to do that and work your way up. You know, I use baseball, you know, a lot as an analogy. You know, a lot of people want to hit a single and land on third base. You know, I had to work my way around the bases and learn my craft. And a lot of times you learn from adversity as well and things that didn't go right. And I've been able to enjoy both winning and adversity. And I mean enjoy because I think you learn and you move on. And so all those things made it really special, you know, to have this opportunity until I went on my first head coach's Zoom meeting. And there was Coach K and Coach Williams and Coach Boeheim and Tony Bennett and on and on and on. And I was like, well, a little bit different level of coaching here now than maybe what the old SoCon or there's some great coaches in the SoCon or even JUCO level. These are Hall of Famers, you know, so that was a little surreal. But I'm excited for the opportunity and excited for the challenge. And I really think this is a great program. It needs a breath of fresh air, and that's what we're here for.
We're talking ball. We're talking life with Steve Forbes. He is the head coach of Wake Forest. So as long as we talked about Lone Tree, I mean, never mind basketball. You worked on farms in Lone Tree. You worked at a McDonald's. What did you learn about work ethic in Lone Tree?
Well, you get what you deserve in life most often than not, you know, when it comes to work, you know, and that's the way the game of basketball is. You got to put the time in to get the results. And so you basically learn an honest day's work, you know, and when you grow up in a farming community like that. But it's a special place because it's only about 10 miles southeast of Iowa City. And so you have the University of Iowa there as well. you know, to enjoy and to be around. And that's where I picked up the love for the game, was going, you know, Lute Olson was the coach at Iowa when I was growing up, and I used to go to the field house and play, and then I'd watch him watch the Hawkeyes practice. And Ronnie Lester was my favorite Iowa Hawkeye, and they went to the Final Four in 80, and I just, you know, grew up loving the game of basketball because of, you know, where I grew up. And so all those things, you know, go hand in hand. And I did work at McDonald's, and, you know, I used to serve the players on Sunday night. They'd come in to eat. And I'm probably the only head coach in the ACC that's worked at McDonald's and signed a McDonald's All-American. I can probably promise you that.
That's the best.
But you know, you've probably heard, I have made a living, you know, recruiting Burger King All-Americans who want to kick McDonald's ass. So, you know, we'll take them both here. You know, we might even take some Zaxby's or some Bojangles. But, you know, we're going to get some good players that play hard and want to win.
Let me tell you something, Steve. I my first job ever was at In-N-Out Burger, and it kicked my ass. And I learned the meaning of hard work, and I learned how it's the great equalizer, man. It just does not, it does not matter. It does not matter. You do the job, or they'll find someone else who will do it for you. So I remember those times. I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, you and Raptors head coach Nick Nurse go way back. In fact, you offered him a job on your staff at Barton County Community College back in the day. How would you describe, and I love Nick Nurse, how would you describe the relationship the two of you have, and then what did it mean to you to watch him and your former player, Fred VanVleet, win a championship?
Well, I'm an emotional guy, and so I did not go to the game. I could have. I watched that championship game, and I cried, to be honest. And I cried for Nick as much as I did for Fred, but I know where Nick came from. You know, all these things that you and I are talking about, he experienced the same things. You know, starting in a small town in Iowa and working his way, you know, over through Europe and then back through the D&G leagues to the NBA assistant to being the head coach. And, it was an incredible experience for me and my family. We're not just professional friends. You know, we're friends, and our families are close. And, you know, last summer we had a great time. He threw out the first pitch. He's a diehard Cubs fan. My wife and my son, we went up and spent the weekend in Wrigleyville with him and his wife and kids, and watched him throw out the first pitch, which he dialed one right down. He threw one right down the middle. I couldn't believe it, man. He went out there and just threw a seed. And, you know, just had a great time, hung out with Madden, went to his restaurant. Just had a good time. But Nick's, he's the salt of the earth. Obviously, tremendous coach, tremendous relationship person. And he's not afraid to roll the dice in the games. You know, he's kind of innovative in some ways. And you know, we talk all the time, and obviously I have a ton of respect for him.
Steve Forbes is my guest. He is the head coach of Wake Forest. Yeah, Steve, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the program, but I want to ask you this too. Like, clearly you had a plan. You worked that plan. I'm curious about mindset. For instance, when you're growing up in Lone Tree or you're coaching at places like Barton Community College, was the plan always to be to end up with the best of the best in the ACC, with guys like Coach K, Roy Williams, Leonard Hamilton, Jim Boeheim, and the rest of that group of legends? Is that what you were thinking back then? Was that the plan?
You know, Jim, I wanted to be a head Division I coach. There's no doubt about that. And I always dreamed it. And I think before you can do it, you got to see it and you got to dream it. You got to visualize it. Lack of a better term was that old 80s movie Vision Quest. I think you got to think about it. And did I grow up an ACC guy? No. You know, I grew up in the heart of the Big Ten and at that time the Big Eight and then the Big 12. But to have this opportunity is, it's an opportunity of a lifetime and one that, you know, I don't take for granted. I get up every day when I put my feet on the ground and I get to work, you know, and we have a plan for success that has worked over time. And we're going to bring it here and do the same. And so I think for sure that I dreamed to be a Division I head coach. I didn't know where that would be. I got lucky when I got East Tennessee State. And then we did, like you said, we won, you know, and we won 130 games in 5 years, and other opportunities opened up, you know, and here I am at the age of 55, you know, I got a great opportunity, and I'm going to take full advantage of it.
I love it. Last thought. So when you look at the history of Wake Forest, when you look at the potential, does it feel like you are sleeping or on a sleeping giant that simply needs that spark?
Yes, for sure. You said it as best as I could say, and that's what I've said since the day I've, you know, took over the job, is it's here. Everything is in place, Jim, to win. Everything. There's no excuses. You know, it's really getting really good players, and they're everywhere around here. And then you have the, you know, a lot of times it's basketball and books, or books and then basketball. This place is books and basketball. You get them both here. You get a top 30 education. You get the number one league in the ACC. You got this tremendous facility, so there's no excuses. You know, you just got to go out and execute the plan and, you know, spread the word and have some enthusiasm about what you're doing, you know, and find the people that are committed, you know, to being great in the classroom and great on the court. When you find those things, success is going to happen.
I love what I'm hearing. He is the head basketball coach at Wake Forest. He was named head coach last month, and as I mentioned, 130 wins in five seasons as head coach at East Tennessee State. You do something like that, you get an opportunity like this. Steve Forbes, my guest. Steve, congrats. I know you've worked your entire life to put yourself in this position, and I know you're going to take advantage of it. And once you guys get back to work in earnest and we see basketball the way we know it, we definitely have to have you back on the show.
I'd love to, and I really, really appreciate you having me on. And please stay safe, and when things get back to the new normal, we'll hopefully see each other.
Here are the two numbers you need to know. 21 days, 15 shows, then we are there. So, do what you gotta do to get ready. Put in for the time off. Start planning to fake that head cold. Make sure you're dialed into a terrestrial affiliate, or that you have CBS Sports Network on your cable package, or get Sirius XM Channel 206, then have a backup plan, like a live stream off the website or radio.com app in case something were to go sideways on you that day. Be sure you're covered. Be sure you're ready. In other words, stay ready. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Leave the getting ready to me. That's my job. And as part of getting ready, I've been running down the field. I've been profiling the players. So everybody listening has an idea of who they're about to hear on the 19th and who that person is and what they're capable of. The guy that I'm talking about today is capable of just about anything, capable of ripping the entire event because he already has, capable of no showing because I've not heard from this guy since Smackoff 25, nearly 1 year ago, not one call. So I guess it is time for the annual question as we head into the summertime. Where is Mikey? Where is Mike in Indy? Where is the 2014 champ? Where is the 11-time participant and the 6-time runner-up? Where the hell is one of the best to ever do it? Truth is, I don't know. But I've got a feeling that's the way Mike wants it. This guy has shown up. He's done some serious damage 11 years straight. If he misses Smackoff 26, it'll be a first. But you never know with Mike. So I'm not going to assume anything. 2 years ago, he retired, and he unretired one day before Smackoff 24. Last year, he attempted to sell a cameo on his call for $5,000 plus one. $5,001. So in the words of Kevin Garnett, what I'm saying, anything is possible. One thing that I do know, Mike in Indy is a world-class jungle caller. It's been that way since 09. This guy's been coming in and dropping bombs for over a decade, like this one back in 09 on Brad and Corona's lack of sports takes.
Brad wants to talk about me playing 5-on-5 at 24-hour fitness. The fact that Brad knew basketball is 5-on-5 is a sign somebody fed him that line. We all know Brad doesn't know jack about sports, and that's why he never has any sports takes. The last time Brad showed up at a 24-hour fitness, he was wearing a pair of Spanx and carrying a yoga mat. I think Brad's hatred for sports comes from his unathletic childhood, where instead of gym class being awesome for people like me, it was torture for scrubs like Brad. Someone passes him the basketball and he has to do something goofy, like trap it against his chest to catch it. Brad always being one of the first kids out in dodgeball, which he didn't mind too much because he could sit on the side and gossip with the other girls about studs like me.
That call was from 11 years ago. And it plays back today as something worthy of the 2020 Smackoff. Dude has been coming up and in on dudes for over a decade now. and has lost none of his MPH or movement. Here is part of his 2018 call from Smackoff 24.
Today I'm going to play a little game of show and tell. I'm going to show you all how great I am, and then I'm going to tell you about it. I know everybody's saying I'm responsible for the Left and Laguna rule, banning studio appearances, and that's true. I got that done. But it was to protect Rome against a psychopath like Rick in Buffalo. Rome doesn't exactly have a crew of ass kickers on the other side of that glass. You got Hawk, who threw out his back putting on his shoes. Alvy would just hit the dude, no sound bite, while Keith Arnold takes a hands-off approach, just like he does every day at work. This guy works like he's got a guaranteed contract. I haven't seen him do a damn thing since he showed up. Are you kidding me, Lef? Nice pre-recorded, doctored-up call. Take out the gimmicks, and that call sucks so bad it might have sucked another Southwest passenger out of airplane window.
This dude's a beast, and in case you needed any more proof of that, here's a taste of his 2019 effort from Smackoff 25.
Romy, I'm the big, long, straight piece in Tetris. Stevie Carbone is that crappy zigzag piece you get right before your screen fills up. You've heard everybody coming at me today. I got so many beefs, I can't even keep track. I got so much beef, Beaks in Studio City tried to rob me in broad daylight. Rome, I have thousands of Twitter followers, but I only follow five, so getting a follow from me is a huge honor. If I win today, I'm going to open up the floodgates and follow the whole XR4TI. That might be the closest you knuckleheads ever get to a Twitter verification. Now let me translate all that into Hawk's natural dialect. Caw! Rome, I'm having a tough time dealing with that moving stage that ESPN uses to whisk Booger McFarland from one end of the field to the other. What's next? They're going to suspend Booger McFarland's fat ass in a zipline harness hovering over the field?
Mike truly believes that he should have 9 titles. Like, it's part of his DNA. The guy legitimately believes he has won every smack-off that he has ever shown up for. In reality, he has 1, which makes him a legend. But that's not good enough for Mike. Mike wants to be the most decorated caller of all time. And not just in his own mind, either. Bottom line is this. If Mike shows up 3 weeks from today, he becomes an instant threat to take the entire thing once again. And everybody knows it because everybody has felt it in the past.
You already know what's up, Romy. You know why I'm here. I'm the best there ever was and the best there ever will be. Mark in Boston is a proven caller, proven to be average. The most pathetic man in the jungle, Stevie Carbone. Carbone realized he wanted to be a reality spoiler when he told some little kid Santa Claus didn't exist. And when he saw the disappointment on that kid's face, Stevie thought, damn. That felt good. Brad and Corona, I bet this cat has to watch 30 minutes of Melrose Place in the morning just to get right. Mike Tirico thinks this guy's a tool. I'd like to start by talking a little Women's World Cup. Alex Morgan is hot.
I wanted to wish everybody a happy October, or as Matthew Perry calls it, McRib Month.
The only reason Brad's name pops up on National Dog Day is because he's a bitch.
And Mark in Hollywood, I'm with you on your rant about Hulk Hogan, but then you go on to make fun of people with Tourette's Syndrome. Bitch poser! Mark should have won the ESPY Award for courage coming back after those last two ass whoopings he got. Evan in the Bay, this Rick Flores kook, these two imbeciles have let so many cats out of the bag that Adam Hawk had to excuse himself to the restroom for a little bit of personal time.
Joe in Hollywood, Joe, you're about as smooth as AC Green at a nightclub. Your last call violated both elements of the have a take, don't suck rule. You didn't have a take and you suck. Vic, you are a worthless word gypsy.
What, Jim Abbott chewing his own arm off didn't want any of that?
I go hard in the paint because y'all can't.
Stu says he's hungry for his next challenge. I think he's just hungry, period. I'm going to roast Stu and then feed him to himself. Mark in Hollywood, get a clue, bro. Mark, you might as well bend over and spell the word run.
For any of you other kooks that want to try to take a run at me leading up to the smack-off, you better don't. You better don't.
Mikey, you better don't. You better don't. You better don't skip the smack off, Mikey. You better don't. Hope to see you on June 19th, player. Josh Johnson. Josh, great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Chief.
Good to have you, man. All right, so take me back a little bit. Last year, you were coming off a 2018 season where you started 3 games for Washington, and then the opportunity came up to play in the XFL. What made you join that new league?
Well, actually, after the little quick stint with the Redskins, I actually had experienced an ankle injury in the first game that I started in, and I just continued to play on it. So once the offseason hit, I had to get surgery on that, and then that put me down for a couple months. So I missed pretty much free agency last year. And then Detroit had brought me in, and I'm back in a training camp to compete for their job. I had made the roster, but then they let me go 2 games in for a younger quarterback. And the whole time, Oliver Luck was, just in my back pocket, hitting me up, telling me the XFL was interested or whatnot. And then after Detroit cut me, for really, I felt like no reason but my age. So I just started, facing my reality that they were trying to push me out the league for, because of my age. So I was going to go somewhere that was going to give me opportunity to play and really, showcase, where I'm at in my career. And that's what, Coach Moss and Coach Chow did. And we were able to do some good things. Unfortunately, he just got shut down early.
Josh Johnson joining us. That's exactly what happened. You came to the LA Wildcats. You were there with Winston Moss and Norm Chow. You were doing some really good things. You beat Tampa Bay on Sunday, March 8th. It felt like it was going to be the start of a really nice run. But then at the same time, COVID-19 was becoming a serious problem. The NBA suspends its season. And then on Thursday, the day after, you find out that your season's over too. What was it like to hear that news in the middle of that run you were having?
Oh, it was crazy because, I remember how we were feeling right after the Tampa game. We were on a high. We were on a high note. Me being a veteran player, veteran quarterback, I started seeing the young guys start to understand what it takes to actually be a pro, learning how to prepare, go out to practice every week, and translate, the game plan on the field. And so I was really excited about where we were headed with the Seattle game. And I was actually with Snoop when we were discussing some business things possibly at his compound. And then the NBA news came up. And as soon as the NBA news came up, I just got this bad feeling inside. This is about to get real nasty. And then my thought process shifted to okay, this is a real thing. So what's going to happen? And I started worrying about my family and other things of that nature. And as we got to practice the next day, you just knew the vibe wasn't right. And then guys expressed their concern over the pandemic. And then by the end of the day, the league, we was on our way home. So it was a quick whirlwind of everything. And it went from trying to play sports at a high level to getting home safe.
Josh Johnson joining us. I mean, dude, your journey is absolutely amazing. You recently did a video where you thanked the league, and you talked about that journey. You made the point that when you were selected in the NFL draft back in 2008, you were dreaming of a long and promising career, quote, however, my reality has been setting records for being cut, end quote. For those who do not know, you've been with 13 teams in 12 NFL seasons, which to me is amazing. I mean, it goes to show not only do teams want you, but they know you can learn a new system and get with new coaches. But what's that journey been like? That's an amazing journey to take.
Stressful as hell, honestly. I mean, because you never really know. I mean, since I've been in the NFL, I've had first it was my daughter, now I got two other kids. So that instability of living in between two places because you don't want them bouncing around that much, that adds a lot of stress to it. Just a lot of doubt, questioning your ability because you start getting cut. And I remember the first time I got cut was a lot worse than obviously the last time. So just as you grow within that process, you really have to start narrowing your focus for me. And I was just really, I had to narrow to what was I actually doing on my end? Because some situations, it might have been me had to be better. Some situations, it just wasn't a good fit. And first, I had to get over my pride. And then it was there. It was like, all right, how do you just focus on getting better as an athlete? And I think that's where I'm at now, just with the ability to step in anywhere and just learn anything, like you said. And I have complete confidence in myself that I have to do that. It's just the reality of, that playing that waiting game. It really sucks because you got, being in NFL is like being at Disneyland, I like to say. And then when you're not, you go back to the reality of looking on the outside of Disneyland. But it's so easy to get into that park when you meet the criteria. It's just that it's only a limited amount of slots available, and you've got to be one. And right now I'm not one, but I'm waiting to be one.
Josh Johnson joining us. All right, so while you're waiting for that, you're doing a lot of things off the field as well. You've been really active with United Gaming League. You're currently involved in the 64-person Pros v. Joes Madden tournament. It's benefiting COVID relief. It's being broadcast on Twitch. Lay that out for me. How did the tournament come to be, and how's it going so far?
Okay, through our foundation, Found First Family Foundation, we actually had one of our partners, business partners, reach out to us about the Philly players that Ben Simmons have started with his brother. And they were trying to, expand the campaign across the nation. So they wanted to do one in Oakland. And then for my part, I was going to donate anyway. But, I mean, I try to be creative with it. So I said, I mean, I knew I'm a part of the gaming community, especially being a part of UGL. I figured let's bring the gaming community for a good cause, you know, play video games and raise funds and have different people come support the stream, even support the groups that are actually out here combating the pandemic in a clean, safe way. You can't really do any fundraising when you go, you know, do big dinners or whatnot to raise money. So I figured doing it through the gaming thing would be real creative, would be real fun, and it's been an enjoyable day so far. And now we at the Elite Eight today.
I love that, Josh. Really quickly, I think as some people know, you and your cousin, Marshawn Lynch, are both from Oakland. I want to ask you about that really quickly. How much does being from Oakland define and motivate you?
It's who I am. It's who I am. I wouldn't be here if I didn't grow up the way I did, if I didn't have a foundation of what I did. A lot of my principles and everything, they're just that rebel mindset, man. I mean, I wouldn't have made it to endure all these tribulations of getting cut as a football player over and over if I didn't have a reality of realizing what I overcame growing up in the city of Oakland. And I don't look at that as a bad thing. I look at it as an accomplishment to be able to endure such things that was set up for possibly for me to be a failure. And I didn't let that, weigh me down. Same thing with my cousins. We all use that as motivation to help us do better, but then we embraced it to make it even a positive. And that's what we've been about our whole life, just turning negatives into positives.
Man, there's some amazing ballers, some amazing people that have come out of that area, really tough-minded people, really talented people. So bottom line, do you feel like you've got more football in front of you? Do you feel like when the NFL and XFL and or XFL come back, is there an opportunity waiting for you?
I think the film speaks for itself. I mean, I think a lot of people tend to want to look at what I am on paper. But I guarantee you, if anybody actually watched me and watched me play, I don't play like a 34-year-old. I don't move like one. I've only gotten better as a quarterback. And in response, every time people get to nationally see me play, it's always, why is this guy not on someone's roster? So I think that all speaks for itself, man. I've just got to, my resume doesn't fit the mold. But, there's always somebody who breaks the mold every year. Somebody breaks the mold of what we think the way the game is supposed to be. And so I'm just always keeping that hope, as long as my body going to allow me, that I'm going to be the mold breaker one year. And that's just where my mind at with it.
12 years in the NFL. He led the XFL with a 106.3 passer rating this past year. He's hosting a 64-person Pros v. Joes Madden tournament with the Ultimate Gaming League. He is Josh Johnson. Josh, great to have you on the show. Appreciate you, and I appreciate that conversation.
All right, thanks, big dog. You take care.
Trey Turner is my guest. Trey, it's great to have you on. Before we get into the offseason and everything else, how are you and the people around you doing during these challenging times and this pandemic?
Just trying to make the best out of it. Stay out of harm's way when possible. Just listen to the precautions that's being put forth for us. How are you and your family, man?
All right, so let me ask you this. We've got a new normal, but what is a normal day like for you right now, and how do you go about staying in shape?
Really just working out at home. Was able to get my hands on some gym equipment and some weights, and, it's been pretty cool, man. Just able to get my own workouts in and still following my regimen.
Good. Trey Turner joining us. Now, Marshall Yanda, for instance, announced his retirement and then immediately went on a diet and an exercise regimen. This guy looks amazing, and he looks totally different. Yeah. I know you read about his approach. What do you make of what he did and how quickly he was able to reinvent himself and his body?
Man, I think his mindset. I think your body could take more than what your mind allows you to think that it can. And from what I took from it was just his discipline and his mindset, man. And how he applied, his theory and did it day in and day out with no excuses.
Trey, I think the fans might think that you're an offensive lineman and you're already huge. It's easy to stay that big. Is it, or do you have to really work in maintaining that kind of size?
Yeah, it's two different kind of bigs. It's big and it's sloppy big, And you want to be big and fit. So it is kind of tough to be big and fit rather than just going, eat hamburgers and french fries and whatnot all day. So it definitely takes some work to keep a fit, big approach.
So in terms of that kind of eating, like that's something else the fans think, hey, man, wouldn't that be great to eat whatever you want, whenever you want? It seems to me it's a lot of work to consume that much food. How do you do it? I mean, is it a matter of slamming it into protein shakes? How are you able to eat that much and eat the right foods?
I think it's about portion. Once you see, maybe if you get a chef and if it, you could see them do it, and you can start doing it for yourself. And this is about knowledge, you know, just knowing what to put into your body, how it affects your body, and, you know, when the right time to put, you know, foods into and nutrition into your body. So it's just about learning it, and, you know, knowing what to do.
Trey Turner is joining us. All right, so as I mentioned, you've had a really, really nice career. If we go back a little bit, what was your reaction when you found out that you were going to be a member of the L.A. Chargers?
I was excited, you know. I was surprised by the trade, of course, but I was excited, man. New venture for me, a new city, a new team, a good team. So I'm just happy about it.
Okay. So to elaborate on that, like, you go to a new city, you go to a new team, you go to a new stadium. They unveiled some amazing new uniforms. Does it feel like a fresh start? And even if you're motivated and focused, do you feel rejuvenated by a fresh start, kind of a reset?
Definitely. That was something I had mentioned, man. You know, it's just an opportunity for me to reestablish myself and reestablish who I am. And, you know, just take it to the next level, and that's what my plan is.
Okay, so when you and I started the interview, we talked about mindset. I listed some of your accomplishments at the top of the interview. You've pretty much accomplished everything there is in this league as an offensive lineman. But when you come to a new team, do you feel like you want to prove yourself all over again? Is there any of that?
Definitely. These guys don't know me that well. I don't know them too well, and I definitely got something to go out there and show and prove, man. Show them that they made the right decision by coming to get me in a trade, and, you know, just show my brothers that, you know, I'm riding with them.
Okay, so they don't know you yet. Not yet, but you've also been regarded as a leader. So when you come to a new team, how do you approach that leadership role? I mean, do you immediately try to establish yourself with how you talk to everybody, or do you take a lead-by-example approach instead?
It's definitely having respect for everybody. I feel like when you give respect, you get respect. But it's also about actions, man. I go out there and I lead by example on the field. I know what I'm supposed to be doing in the meeting rooms. And, you know, just putting forth the effort and not so much just with the vocal part, you know. Just actually doing it and people seeing it. I feel like that's my best way of leading, and that's the best way that is reciprocated to me.
Trey Turner is a member of the Chargers now. So you've been to 5 Pro Bowls already, but you're still really young. For example, you were only 20 when you were drafted, and you started 9 games as a rookie. As we all know, this is a grown man's league. What was it like going from college to competing against grown men at such a young age?
I didn't know no better. I just was playing football. So it wasn't too much of a thought. It wasn't, you know, nothing that I, you know, really put too much forth and effort with. I just like to have fun playing football, man. Different color, different state, you know, different uniforms, but, you know, same game. So it's just a blessing.
Yeah, you go back to that time also. Gerald McCoy, who was with Tampa Bay at that time, says that he saw something in the first time he faced you as a rookie, and he told you after the game that if you keep it up, you're going to be a Pro Bowl lineman one day. What did it feel like to earn that level of respect immediately from a player of that caliber?
I mean, it was dope. I believe that was the first game we had, and you know, it was Gerald McCoy that I was playing against. So it was different, but man, you know, it was just extreme pleasure, you know, getting them word from him, man. He's a great player, and just trying to keep leveling up, man.
Trey, like, when you have the kind of career you've had, people are just going to naturally assume that recruiters were all over you from the moment you started playing high school football. But that's not the story, right? The story goes the colleges were not exactly beating down the door to see the team at St. Augustine in New Orleans. What was the program like when you first started playing there?
You know, high school was cool, man. I went to high school with a lot of ballers, to be honest. Tyrann Mathieu went to my high school. Leonard Fournette went to my high school. I went to a guy by the name of Lorenzo Dawson, and so forth and so on. And, you know, I wouldn't say we were the smallest recruiter. We wasn't the biggest, but we had some ballers, man. So whoever came out of that school, man, they got some gems, for sure.
Trey, I'm glad you mentioned Tyrann. Tyrann Mathieu has been one of my favorite guys to talk to the entire time that he's been in the league, even going back to college. You tell a story about how the two of you went to a camp in Tennessee back in 2009. The two of you were there. Jarvis Landry was there. And Tyrann did his thing, and he absolutely blew up. What do you remember about that?
I just remember that was one of the first times that we had even been out to even a college. And he lit the camp on fire. He kind of set the pace, you know, set the way for everybody else to come behind. To be honest, he kind of opened the floodgates. He went out there and he did his thing. And then, you know, offers started coming left and right for everybody else. just kind of, like I said, just open the gates.
You know, like his athleticism, man, he's just electric. But in terms of leadership and his mind for the game, how strong is he? What kind of marks do you give him, like in those intangibles, too?
Definitely, man. Some things you can't coach. He definitely had those traits for sure.
Before you go, let me ask you, you were in Carolina. You played with and blocked for Cam Newton. I've been really impressed with how he's battled through the pain the last few years. What was Cam like as a teammate?
Cam was a great teammate, man. Just a good dude overall, man. A leader on and off the field. Had passion for the game. Somebody who put in the effort, put in the time. And, showed up on Sundays, man.
Is there any doubt in your mind that he's a starter in the NFL still?
No doubt in mind. I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm not in a position to make decisions. You know, it ain't my call, but he would definitely be on the roster. I mean, I feel like he could be on any roster. So, man, I just know whenever he does get on one, it's going to be a problem.
Hey, John.
My man, John, in New York. Let's go to New York. John, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Tim, everything's good. Staying safe, wearing a mask. You know, how are you? Everything good?
Good. Family's good. That's I will tell good. Janet. That's I will good, tell Jim. Janet and the boys you asked. I want to ask about you and your family. I'm glad to hear that, man. Stay safe, brother.
Everybody's doing well. Thanks, Jim. So yeah, Mike and Indy, he's around the circuit. You know, he's still filing grievances with the other clones. You know, and as long as he's around, there'll never be a water shortage because he's always crying about the smack-offs that he should have won. And I just wanted to talk about Cal. You know, Cal, the only thing happening at the Vegas airport is you getting locked up for crapping when Conor McGregor shows up and rips your head off. There's nothing good or there's nothing about your game. There's more air in your game than there is in Brad and Corona's banana hammock. And just, you know, for the smack off, my advice would be just to sit this one out and watch the smack off from up under Caleb's chin, where there's plenty of room to social distance and stay safe, Jim. And that's all I got to say. And I can't wait for June 19th. It's going to be great.
Oh, my man, John. Way to get that plane down, brother. Good job.
Brother.
John in New York. Man, he got in just in time, didn't he? He knows. You know why? Because he's got a clock in his head. In Detroit, Johnny on the watch list, trying to get the golden ticket. What's going on, Johnny? How are you?
Hey, Jimmy, I really like the format of the match, but I'd love to see the team of Pat McAfee and John Daly added. Can you imagine these two guys barefoot, burning heaters, and hitting tee shots off beer bottles? I want to see JD cannonball some Jack Daniels, and then stripe one past Phil with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Rome Kell in Vegas RSVP'd 30 days early to the smack-off, and it's no coincidence. If you ask, 9 out of 10 hookers will tell you he's always early. Vic and NoCal has been...
I don't like that call. I have no idea how this guy even made it onto the watch list. But now he's off it, so that's no longer a concern. 9 out of 10 hookers will tell you he's always early. Alvy, is it time? Alvy's taking a look back. Now, I did not work Monday, but Alvin did, so it's not the 4 days that were, it's the week that was.
Thanks for having me, Chief.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A truly brilliant Tuesday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Great to be back. Hope you had a nice weekend. What's cracking? Thanks to my guy, Bill Ryder, for coming in.
Bill Ryder with you. Thank you to Isaiah Thomas.
And Red Lobster.
I want to start with the match two.
Two for me.
Stop acting like that was something awesome. I mean, did we all watch the same thing? Because the way some folks were acting, we just saw one of the most hilarious things ever put on the small screen.
Yeah!
Do it. A two. Yes, because that's how we roll.
I'm glad the whole thing happened. I'm even more glad it's over.
That's good, Tiger. Pick that one up.
It raised a lot of money, and it raised even more corn.
Fairway. Over on Southern.
Boom! Roastmaster. We are joined by Martin Jarman.
I appreciate you having me in the jungle. Long-time listener, so this is an honor to be with you. I'm looking forward to the smack-off on June 19th, Jim.
The smack-off. Drizzle.
But I got my priorities straight, and I know a lot of people think Uncle Fester ran me off, but that's just not how it went down. What's my name?
Dizzy Bobo. Fizzle finally got his Metro PCS cell phone line back on.
They all stand up and start going,
If it's a conversation about his legacy and whether the lying, cheating, bullying, deception, and total fraud erases all the good that he did, all the money that he raised, all the hope that he gave people.
What am I on?
Is that erased by the lie?
I'm on performance-enhancing drugs.
Bob Costas.
You know, we are not that far apart, but we might as well be a world apart with social distancing. We could hop in our respective cars right now and meet at Javier's or Mastro's or Moto Mio, but it wouldn't be what you have in mind.
JT the Shtick. Wow. 1,000 calls a show is good radio? I would have loved to hear your takes if you had any.
Somewhere the brick's got to be like, the hell did I do?
Can I please have another?
You even talk?
Stevie Carbone, man. Hall of Famer Terrell Davis joining us. Who else did you look to?
Of course, John.
Hey, John.
You know, John was one that's like playing with Michael Jordan. Like, you can't come to a game with anything less than your best.
Thank you to John Elway.
It's about time you bring some youth to the competition. The millennials haven't been able to compete. We've been busy, but the times have changed.
I want to hear from a millennial. Is that all you got? Holy millennials. Brandon McManus.
The best breakdown is that we would report for training camp around July 28th, but I think we'll be able to go full-fledged right from that time.
Keep Mike and Indy's name out of your mouth. He's my pitch.
Maybe we all can define funny different ways, but to me, that's funny. That made me laugh. Are you listening, Cal? I know you are. Are you ready to fight everybody who's referenced you, Cal? Cal wants to fight all of Twitter. Lonny Sitake joining me for another couple of moments. Would you be okay, though, playing without fans in the stadium?
Yeah, of course. We watched all the UFC fights, right? I don't think those punches were any softer, so I'm really excited about the next few weeks.
Why are you throwing mud, and why are you having, like, assisted attack. Like, don't do it. You look like an idiot. That's just being exposed.
All right, going forward, I'm going to do everything I can not to be exposed. And be aware of that. Not Jim, run
you're
you
far
down.
From being exposed, man. You're the real deal, man. We've had some real great classic moments, my friend.
I'm talking about Lloyd Pierce.
It's been an extremely tough week for me, personally. I'm not an NBA head coach. I don't have any privilege. I am a black man, and that's not going to go away. The NBA head coach could. The fear of being a black man could go away, but it isn't. It hasn't. And right now, it's at its worst point.
Talking to Quinn Cook, whoever wins this thing is going to immediately get an asterisk hung right on them.
I think the team who wins it this year, they really deserve it. To go through this, nobody has an advantage. I think it's even harder.
I know you guys don't know me very well, so let me tell you a little something about myself. I am not afraid. I'm not afraid to call, and I am not hiding.
If you have a golden ticket and you get run while in the midst of holding on to that golden ticket, you know what that means, don't you? The chopper has arrived.
Yeah, it's a chopper.
And when he came out with his Air Jordan sneakers.
Damn it, Larry.
You want another one?
I made my point. So let's do it again and let's do it right. Parody Larry.
I appreciate this, Rome. This is for Neems. I am Brady.
Yeah, long break my ass. Larry, you are in jungle quarantine. You are in a jungle lockdown. 6 feet my ass.
Get your ass.
How about
lost.
6 weeks? How about 6 months?
Eric, she was in the background of Jim in Fall River's call. You remember that, Rome?
Who's that in the background?
Not Fall River. Fall River is the place where 100 years ago...
Jim, what is that animal in the background?
I will behead Rafael Dos Anjos. I will drag his head through the streets of Rio de Janeiro.
Who says he's hungry for his next challenge? I think he's just hungry, period.
Chew it!
I'm gonna roast stew and then feed him to himself.
You better don't skip the smack off, Mikey.
You better don't.
Steve Forbes.
I know, I'm probably the only head coach in the ACC. Worked at McDonald's and signed a McDonald's All-American. I can probably promise you that.
It's the best.
It's two different kind of bigs. It's big and it's sloppy big. You
know? No, Cal, the only thing happening at the Vegas airport is you getting locked up for crapping when Conor McGregor shows up and rips your head off.
Kick that up, cat.
I stay for the ladies.
How true.
All right, Romy, be well.
Jim, always, my man.
What are you on?
Thanks for your time, Jim. Appreciate you.
Still, don't work.
Hookers. Premature ejaculation.
All right, thanks, big dog. You take care.
We're done.
Good night now!
There's Alvin with the week that was. Like I said, the most consistent thing about the program.
Good night now!